Hello, everybody. So we just got a few goodies here, so it's going to be a good session. Thanks, Andrew, for that.
Thanks, Jeremy. It's in the swag box here.
Great. So let's get started on the session today. So I'm going to talk about, as a developer, what we do in our daily life and what extra we can do apart from our development capabilities using the new Office 365 or SharePoint add-in model. The app name has changed to add-in. I will be using that. OK, sorry. So my name is Ashish, and I am an Office 365 and SharePoint consultant. So anything around the development area for Office 365 or SharePoint, you can ask me the questions and in the session or after the session. What I'm going to just quickly tell you again, the same story, that Office 365 is one of the fastest growing business in the Microsoft history. And you have been seeing this slide again and again in many presentations. What Satya's vision is, until we give the capabilities to developer to give the extension for these platforms, we are not going much further. So if you see in my demo, we're going to talk about not just SharePoint or Office 365. We're going to talk about the Outlook, Word, PowerPoint, Excel. Also can help us to drive more productivity. It's not just that we have to simply write the custom programs. We can just go and consume the applications which are available now. And why we have that potential in the application development is because of the data which is available in Office 365. And this is keep growing up on a daily basis. And this is something like a last quarter numbers. And I'm not sure when they will release new, but this is huge. If you look at the number of email goes through every day, number of users attend meeting on the Office 365, the number of subscribers get added on a daily basis here. And that's in the Office 365. Why I'm talking Office 365? Because the development capabilities which are there for Office 365 exist same way like Office and SharePoint in the on-premises as well. So what you do is for Office 365 can be done in the on-premises as well. So if you take on-premises and try to move to online, then it could be a problem. But the reverse work very well. A bit boring slide here. So I'm going to talk about as when I start my work on a project, what I do daily basis. And then I'm going to talk about as developer, what changes I can bring to the development capabilities of an organization. And when I talk to customer, how I should go and analyze the requirements, how shall I plan the development around that, shall I go and just write the code, or shall I go and explore first and then write the code. Then we're going to look at the tools for us. So as a developer, there are a lot of tools getting released by Microsoft on a daily basis. And there's a lot of good tools in browser, on-premises, or on cloud. You can use and quickly test your development work. And if that goes good, then you can just adapt in your Visual Studio. So last option is Visual Studio, which I'm going to look at. Everything I'm going to try in the browser on other tools as well. And ask for help. We know that SharePoint is very big. Office 365 is very big. Nobody is master in everything. So we're going to look at those channels as when I have a question, where shall I go and ask that? Because it's really important, even for me, when I don't know anything new, I go and look at the channel as Yammer or whatever, and ask a question and get an answer and then start my work. So we have a lot of channels. And then we will open for Q&A. During these topics, I'm going to run through the slides, the demo as well. So there will be interchanging the slides. So first thing here, as a developer, what's my day look like? So when I get the customer requirement, I do the analysis. I do the information architecture. I plan my user stories, break them down in the technical mapping, and then start my work. So when I enter my office and exit my office, on a generally, we just look upon the tasks, like we have completed so many user stories, and then we run our code to build those stories, and then we unit test. It's really important to do the unit testing, because if you are not doing unit testing, you can't really do an integration testing. So our add-in model capabilities are really independent. So if you would like to develop a component and then do a unit testing, you can do that. And then you can take further for the integration of Office 365 or SharePoint. OK. So before I go further, let's take a common example of our customer problems. So in productivity or Office 365 SharePoint, we face a lot of collaboration problems, searching the information, quickly getting the task done, getting started issues. Yesterday I was attending Christoph's presentation, and he said the first problem in the collaboration is getting started. SharePoint is really a tool where we should allow business users to go and build applications or systems without much IT help. And we're going to take a different approach for building our solutions. Let's take an example. Like we have a customer who faced a collaboration problem, searching information. He would like to have a communication done quickly with Teams through Yammer or emails. He would like to quickly build a couple of the charts using the information which he has. He would like to translate information to send over the internet or documents, and then he would like to have a time management as leave applications or asset management. So these are the very common requests. And when we look at a development side of it, we think about, okay, we have to just go create SharePoint list, write a program, build an app part or web part, build a list and things like that. Let's look at it differently. So what I do generally is about first understand what's the out-of-box requirement and what's the custom requirement here. So in the out-of-box, I really say like when you go there and you see them available, you don't really do any clicks in the system. Like team site is available by default to me. If I have to create a new team site, I can go and select the options. But if I have to go and configure anything else, I have to go and define the process and design it and develop. That's something really a custom development. The important point which I do personally is configure versus custom. So something like a feedback process. So we have a feedback workflow already, but I can't use it straight away on my systems because I have to create an instance out of it and then consume it. So steps like that create an additional workload for you. So you have to really understand what is the out-of-box and very closely the configure, and then you have to go at the last as a custom. Custom, I really take it at the last because I would like to solve the problem out-of-box. Help me to do the upgrades, manage, maintenance, everything. If I go and say, what I'm going to do today is, on the requirements, if I say they are the out-of-box, I don't have to do anything. But if I have custom requirements where I have to do the customization, what shall I do? So first, use your browser. Go to your browser, click on the feedback process, create an instance out of it, create a view using filters, create a list item limits for the view purpose and things like that. Then use your no-code solution like SharePoint Designer or JS Link or CSS strips and tricks so that you can customize your views like a configure options. Then at the custom code, don't just build your projects. You can go for buy option as well now. There could be a good debate of build and buy. As what is good, what is not good, when shall we build, when shall we buy. But it's really an option now because we have add-in capabilities or the app capabilities. And in the store, we have a lot of apps or add-ins available. I'm going to quickly see on my customer requirements, rather than doing a build, how I can do a buy and quickly deliver the requirements. But a couple of times when we go and look up on the buy, we buy an application, but we are not sure how the application stores the data, whether application or add-in store the data in SharePoint of my environment, or they have a provider-hosted system where they store themselves, and what's the data technology they use to separate multi-tenancy application and things. So you have to really know what's the data storage options over there. Then the standards. Sometimes they really don't follow the programming standards. They may be exposing your information on the cookies or the URLs. And your information can be stolen up on the internet because it's Office 365 going up and down on the internet. And identity is really crucial in that. Support. When you buy your application, you really don't know how to configure it, how to use it for first time. And if you buy from someone, on the internet from the store, and they can't give you a support to set it up or run it up, you can't really get the benefit out of it, even you pay for it. So you have to really look for the support options available. Sometimes what happens in the app, there are minor tweaks which you have to do for your application to work according to you. So you can approach those support team and ask, like, can they give you a custom build application out of this? So that really matters a lot in the buy space. Licensing. So a lot of add-ins are free, but some are cost-wise, like a per user or per tenant or per installation basis. So you have to take account as a licensing pricing as well before you buy. Now, as a developer, I have got my customer requirements. I have classified that these requirements are out of box. These requirements require a no-code solution. These requirements are custom. But I'm not really sure whether I have to go build or buy. Now, when we look at the customer requirements, first thing is building the base platform. As a developer, generally we don't get our hands on the installation, but it's really easy. In SharePoint Online, we don't have to do the SharePoint installation, but we have to do the provisioning of SharePoint site collections, lists, libraries, content type, and all that stuff. Now, in on-premises case, if you have to do the provisioning, what shall you do as a developer? Because it's really something, a different area. We're going to quickly look at a couple of the tools here as how they can help us in doing the provisioning or the setup. I'm going to just switch the presentation. Okay. So first thing, as a Auto SP installer, that's something which you will use for your on-premises setup, but that's very handy for doing the installation, and it's easy. As a developer, I really give very less hands on the installation, but when I use this Auto SP installer, I have to just configure the information and give it to the PowerShell which comes with it, and it does multi-server installation in parallel. As a developer, I can do that very easily now. I can build a 4 server farms in maximum 4 to 5 hours time if I have all the planning done, user map information, accounts, and all the IE and things like that. And how you can use it is very easy. So you have a guide to how to use it. You have a build a farm option here. Previously, it was a standalone EXE, which you can download and work, but they have made online tool so that you always get the latest information published over here. Now here, if you have done the installation previously, you can load those XMLs and start from there. So like setting up a dev, test, and production environment and having the same exact replica. So you really don't have to build the information config again and again. You just build once and use it in the dev, test, and production environments. If you look at the template, I'm going to just load the default template here. And in this, it talk about the install. And in the install, you have to first tell how many servers you got. And you can just give a server name here. And I say this is WFE1. I do an add. And I can give 2. And then I say there is an app server. And then I say there is a database server. I got my 4 servers over here. And then I go to the next as install. Now I can tell whether it's my dev environment or a test environment or production. And which version of the SharePoint it is. So 2010, 2013, or 2016 beta. And beta 2 will be out soon in the Thanksgiving time. Then it's an offline install. Now in SharePoint installation, a lot of time as a prerequisite, it does a download and then install. And if you can download those files and keep it with you, you can use the same set of files for installing on multiple servers. And that's an offline install, and that happens very quickly. It's a one-time download effort you have to do that. And if I do that, it will tell you on the mouse over what is the option here and what it will do. Then it's a remote install. So if you are installing on multiple servers, you have to keep it on a shared location, accessible to all servers, and they will read the files from one location, and you can install on multiple servers here. Auto logon. Sometime during the install process, your server needs a reboot, and then you have to log in, and then again the process will start. So you can give an auto log on so that server will do the reboot and again log in using your credentials as the administrator, and again start the process where it left. Disable the loopback check and all those options which are required for the SharePoint to work as a local host process. And then it's an unattended install, and you can define what's the file name where we'd like to save and other stuff. And then even for SharePoint, you can give a key here, and it will use the same key during the install. So you don't have to really look upon those pop-up boxes and give the keys and the names and everything else. Then on the farm config, it goes and talk about the farm accounts, databases, the database port, configuration, central admin configuration, object cache accounts, then managed services accounts. And as a best practices, as a developer, I don't know as an installation what are the best practices. And you can see here, it tells you at least the four accounts required: service, portal, the profile, and search account. So you can go with these default naming. You can change for your environment basis and best practices. And then you can define services. So like web application service. So if you would like to just run the web application of front end on the front end 1.2, the workflow has to run, let's say, on the app. Or if you don't want to provision. So in a workflow, also installation, it's an Azure workflow model now. So you need to set up a Azure workflow manager server separately, and then you have to install those workflow clients on each front-end machine. So you can also download these workflow files and use it with the installer. So you really don't have to configure again or after the workflow manually. Distributed cache, claims to Windows, email options, so you can set them easily. Then logging, so if you would like to enable the log. This is a normal problem sometimes when we do a default install and the logs are getting stored on the C drive for SharePoint and ULS, and they eat up the C drive space very quickly. So when you're setting it up, you can directly point them to D drive or the log drive, and they will not eat up the C drive space. It's very easy rather than doing later after the install now. Then you can go to the web application. So if you would like to do the web application, so like a portal home, you can define the configuration here as a URL or a managed path, and the port number, the URL number, the host header if you are using a host header values, so you can give that as well. Then you have the my site here, and there is a new tool. So if you want, you can do that. Otherwise, you can just remove as a default option. So it's easy to say that yes or no options rather than defining everything your own. Then you have those individual services like managed services, user profile, this users and health, state service, search service, and then Excel services. And then after that, it's more about the other options. And you will be giving the, in the services, you will give the database name, the account for that service, and other configuration. They are very common and similar. And if with this online, I see that it's a project server install option available. In the previous build, which was a standalone EXE, it was not available. So when I do install, a lot of clients need the project server, and that has to be installed on top of SharePoint. So once you complete your SharePoint installation, you go and again do the manual installation for project server. But with the AutoSP install, that can be done easily as well. And when you do the check, it will ask you all the information, and you can provide. And at the last, you do the review as an XML. So it's a XML which you can use. And once you save this XML for your dev, you do a test on your dev. And once it is final as a perfect setup process, you can use the same XML file for your test and production. And the replica is going to be the same. So you really don't have to worry about what when if you're on a leave and you give this XML to someone else and say that use this XML for the test server setup or the production, and he's going to use this exactly the same way what you have tested in the dev. So you can go easily on the leave, and he will not disturb you over calling and what's happening on the system. And then you can reset the configuration if you would like to start from scratch. Now, this is about the on-premises setup tool, which you can use very quickly for SharePoint. Now, in SharePoint Online case, what happens, I have a cloud service where I have to write the program myself or use third-party tools to create site collections, lists, libraries, and services configuration for management of data and search. In general, what I have seen is people go for like a PNP, Office Dev Pattern and Practices team samples, and they write their own code, or they go for the ASP.NET 2 option. So ASP.NET 2 and PNP, they do the pretty much same thing, but the usage is different. Let's see if I have to create a content type, how shall I go for PNP, and how shall I go for ASP.NET 2 here? In the Office Dev PNP, it's a Microsoft-driven community-based project, so people across the world contribute to this project as a samples, as a guidelines, and they have a dedicated team. They don't get salary for this project, they get salary for their job, but as a community part of it, they do the work, and they have created something called as PNP core option, which is like extensions and the enumerations and the functions which you can call and quickly build your information. You don't get to really write from scratch one by one piece of it. Let's see if I have to create a content type and use a PNP package, what will be the code will look like for myself? And when I run this code, what happens in my SharePoint site? This is just one content type. Think about you have to write site collections, subsites, lists, libraries, and security, and a lot of information pieces for the SharePoint Online case. As well in the meantime. It's taking a bit of time here on the server. Yeah. Okay. So this is a sample project which I have created. And to use the PNP, what you have to do is you have to go to the project. It's a console. So you can use Windows application or any other application type. And you can create a better GUI for the client to do that. And then you go to the Nugget Packages Manager. And if I go and see the installed options, so there is a Office Dev PNP Core 16. So in the SharePoint Online space, the APIs are released much faster than your on-premises. So if you're writing a CSOM code, you have to be very careful when you write APIs in the CSOM for on-premises or online. If you are using a online API and your on-premises doesn't have that installation done to support that version, it will fail. So you have to really know which version of the API you have to call up. So you have to just add this Nugget packages and then go back to your program. You have to set up a couple of the basic options to get the URL of the site collection, get the username, password. And once you get that, you have to just say, like, on the website, you would like to create a content type where name is MyCD. That's the content type ID. And then the content type group name. So once I run this program, I go to the site. Let me go to the site. I can try running this program with a different ID and all that, but network may take some time for Office 365, so I thought I will just keep it ready. You will get the PNP group here in the content type, and you get the MyCD, and if you look upon the URL here, so this is your content type ID. And if I take it, go back, that's your content type ID, which it will create back in the system. And if you see how this is using an extension method to create a content type in the CSOM object model for SharePoint Online. Now, if you do the same thing using the ASP.NET 2, which is a kind of equivalent for supporting the online provisioning, Again, you do the basic operation like getting a site and the username and password for the site. And then you can go ahead and create a field and create a content type. And then when you are defining in the site to add a content type, you will define in the content type how many fields has to be there. So SPMetaTo is not a public project much. They do a lot of moderation on that, and they drive these SPMetaTo project. So you see a kind of a hierarchy defined here. So it's really up to us to decide whether you would like to go for a SPMetaTo option or a PNP more for guidance and options to look at the provisioning template. Now, after I do the provisioning, I can go and start my system. Now, in the system, I can use also the PowerShell files or the PowerShell commands to set up it, which I'm not going to touch much because they are already similar to AutoSP installer, which uses the PowerShell for the setup. Now, after I've done the setup, it's more about I have to understand what is my user action here. So as I said, customer has a problem around the collaboration. He would like to have a communication done very quickly. He has a sales team. They get customer emails. They get the customer files in the email. They would like to save it on a central location, not at the desktop of the salesperson. They would like to talk about the charts based on the information they have. They would like to see how quickly they can build a lot of information. And this is all without leaving their much-loved Outlook or Office files or SharePoint. They would like to do a leave management system, and they would like to do a asset management system. They would like to manage all that stuff. Now, if I think about the developer timelines for this kind of a requirement, I think about at least a month will be required if I have to go and do all the programming, like a leave management, communication management, having a Yammer integration, having the communication coming, giving the capability to store the files directly from Outlook to the online systems. And it's really complex because I have to understand and handle a lot of exceptional cases, like what if they don't give a file name while saving it? What if I have a content type and when I'm uploading file from my Outlook, I have to associate it with a proper content type? So when I look at from a developer, it's really complex to build a system in a week's times. It's really a month times and plus more than that. But if I look at the add-in module, which is available now, shall I write the program and do all this, or do I have something available to go and just start using it? So let's look at these options one by one. And I'm going to switch back to my demo. OK. Now, first thing, like if I get a mail, let me start my mail first. If I get a mail from a customer and say that I got a customer file in that, and I would like, as a salesperson, I may be receiving 100 emails from my customer and 100 files in my emails, and I would like to store them at one place so that if someone else is working with the same customer and they have to see the information, they don't have to ask me. They can go directly to the SharePoint site and look at that information. So this is my demo tenant environment. Give me a sec. Let me just do the registration. It's not letting me escape this time. Okay. So let me just reopen it. Sorry, no worries. I have other options as well. Okay, so once I get a mail with my file and I would like to save it on the SharePoint, I can straight away use the option Save Adjustment to SharePoint. I will just have that setup done and show that. But when I do a movement of attachment from my email, it removes the attachment from my email and give me the URL where I have saved it. So next time when I'm seeing my customer email and I don't see the attachment from the SharePoint, attachment in the email, I know where it is saved here. So I don't have to really go and again find. So I can just go and click on this link and it will go there. The same way they have the Outlook ID. So when I work with across people, I can go straight away and see the information here. These add-ins are like web pages, so they can run in your desktop, browser, iPad, iPhone, everything. So it's about the roadmap when they are supported in iPhone, but they are supported well in the iPad for sure now. So if you build an add-in now, you can run it anywhere. And if you see here, you have the attachments available. The users who are over here, you can see. And if you have connected your Yammer or any other social network, you can see the information about them. And you can define the settings as well as what has to happen for your information as a credential. So if you would like to connect to Yammer, you can connect that. If you don't like to connect to Yammer from your Outlook, you think it's not safe, you can skip that part of it. So this is how you can go and set it up. Then if I'm working with a client and I send a mail to my client and say that, okay, I would like to have a response from the client in next 2 days, and if they don't give me a response in next 2 days, what shall I do? Shall I follow up with them? So if I go and write a mail to myself separately and say follow up and just do a testing here, and if I say, if there is a no reply in 2 days on this email, give me a reminder. And this reminder is not like you have to manually go follow it up and set it up. It's very easy here. And when you are sometime like we work in the late night hours and we would like to follow up with the customer and we would don't like to send them in the midnight emails on their phone, we can say that send in 2 hours or 4 hours or tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon so that we are sure that we have actioned it from our side. It's up to the system to send at a particular time. And customer know that he is expecting my mail and he can see that it's coming on time. Then we generally work in a lot of places, and we have Customer Connect, we have Partner Connects, and when we are working with our customer and partners, we have to schedule meetings. And when we schedule meetings, we do a back and forth emails like, I am available this time, this date, time slot, and a lot of time, there are 5-6 emails on just the time zone or the timing setup. Now, if I have to tell my customer that what's my available timing are, I can go straight away so it's looking up my other account which is already here and then I can say what's my availability and I can just go and insert the proposed one. And I can do a text or visual. And it's pretty much loading like an image in my email. So I don't have to really do a back and forth email just on setting up a time. And I can say, this is my calendar look like. And if you are happy, you propose what's your availability. And then I can see my calendar as well. And then I can just send them mail and they will say that they are free at 3 o'clock and let's book it up. Now this is about the Outlook as how we can use it. Now, a lot of time execs, executives in the company don't have time to go on the Yammer and give a Yammer announcement or they would like their personal assistant to help them up. But they would like to post the content, what they would like to do. So when I'm doing a post to my assistants, let me set up something here for my communication. And I say to myself, sorry. And I say tomorrow party. And I give a like, please set up a Yammer announcement for tomorrow party. And I send them up. And once they receive this, they know that they have to go and create an announcement or start working on it as to set up the party. And once I receive the email as an assistant, I go and look upon the communication manager here, which is something built in the Outlook add-in. And you can configure these options for your multiple settings. So like if you have a company WordPress account or you have company Yammer, the loading may take some time because it runs like a web page. You can go and configure it easily in your system once, and you can start using it continuously. I have to just reload it and see. Yep. So I have to start a communication, and I can go to the dashboard and see all the configurations which I have to do. So this is a built-in application. I don't have to really build any integration piece over here with my email or Yammer or anything. I can see a couple of the trials which I did previously as a my communication, my material. So once you start a party setup, you may be getting the invoices for your drinks or beverages and foods and the venues. You can attach them here as well. And then you can build multiple tasks for your communications. So communications can be here. And if you would like to search on the previous communications, you can search them as well. You can search on the task, which task was aligned to what communication previously. You can put up a calendar entry as well when it has to happen. You can look upon all those related files over here and search them as well. And this is more as a setting. When it has to start from and connect to the WordPress and connect to Yammer, internal or external. So sometimes organization throw up a party which is external as well, and they would like everybody in the community to come and join them. So you can go and connect to the external Yammer groups and just post this message directly from your inbox. You don't have to connect something separately or leave your Outlook to set this up. And I go do a create and say tomorrow party. It's picking up the subject already for me. And I'm going to just say, and I say publish to Yammer if I would like to. And then I'm the owner here, and there is an author as well. And there's a published date and which audience it is, whether it's just internal to my organization or it is external organization as well, external Yammer communication as well. And I can just straight away start the communication, and it will appear on that portal which was there in the dashboard page. So I can straight away start the communications from my inbox without leaving it. Now this is how I will work out from the Outlook. Now if I'm working in a Word file, and generally the things in the Word file, when you write a lot of content, sometime in the proposals for legal, you would like to check the information, what exactly you are writing, because legal is something which validates every sentence. So when you write information, like I'm creating a document for the Word, and when you select this up, okay, it's 100 character limit in the Wikipedia search. So when I do a search, automatically the Wikipedia selects the text from my Word and go and check in the Wikipedia directly from my Word file what I'm writing and whether the words which I have used in my sentence are proper and legal will not have much objections. Now, if I'm working with multi-location companies, and sometimes I have a document which is well written in English, but I would like to use a translator service without an external translator as a person to convert the document from English to other language. I can use that here, and I can just select whatever the options I would like. And let me just use a German. And automatically it will translate here. And you can use this translation in your Word file, and you can save it. And you can, and this is searchable, so it's not like just converting the document language to a different one. Now, sometimes I work on the PowerPoints, and in the PowerPoints, the major thing I work is getting a lot of images in my presentations or building up a kind of a course so that user goes through it and do the walkthrough of the defined modules and make sure that they do all the steps in that. So I can use a add-in here to search the images directly online. I don't have to leave my presentation and do a search. And when I do a search, I can do an insert straight away in my PowerPoint. So if I want, I can go and select any of these images. And I can do an insert straight from the add-in. So I don't have to like do a copy-paste manual from Google or Bing search and come back to my presentation. I can do it straight away in my presentation. Then when I build a lot of course modules in the schools for the kids, I would like them, or when I'm building a technical tutorial, I would like my peers to review it and go through all the steps. So if I am building these Office add-ins, I would like to know what steps are there and what sample code can be. So if I have to do a read-write text for my sample code, I can do a check here, and then it gives me a sample code straight in the PowerPoint. And I can run the code, and it can give me the example as what is the output expected. And then I can go next and see what changes I have to do. And when I come back, it does a tick sign over, like it's completed from my reading. And same way, I can go and do a lot of other actions here. This is an example here done for CK12 standard math. So in the classroom, when you are using your PowerPoint for students, you can go and come back straight away. And this is not content owned by me. This is owned by the content owner. So I can say grade 1 math, and then you can define you would like to do an addition subtraction, and then you would like to do an overview of that for the kids. And okay, so this is their add-in problem. Because this is not us, so we have to just go back and refresh it again, because it seems they are having a problem with their add-in. So I can go back and just start from scratch and do a reload. So it's like you are running a web page inside your Office files, and they run pretty well on all the devices. So you can run again and do a geometry or measurement or statics. Now, a lot of time we work on the Excel file for reporting the data. And we would like to present that in the charts or graphs. Now if you see over here, I'm just doing a rough estimation as in the Ignite, how many total attendees are there, and out of that, how many are Microsoft employees. And if I have to show them like from which location they are, I can just select this data and click on my Bing map, and it creates the pie chart for me and shows me the data straight away. I don't have to give a geolocation separately or anything. It just goes and reads the name from there and map it back. If there is any double name confusion in the map, it will ask you which city exactly you are looking at. Now, if I have to represent this in the numbers, I can use a people graph here and say that from Sydney there are 1,000 attendees, and from Melbourne there are 800 employees. And I can read from the image itself that more people are from Sydney. Now, apart from this, if I have to do a lot charting, I can go just and click on edit, do an insert. And if you are not really sure how to play with the data, they do come with the sample data generally. So you can start straight away in your sample and talk about what kind of data you need. you need a sum, you need average, you need from which table. This is a sample data. So if I have to start with my data, I can go and start my data. For that, I have to get the full version. But I can go and look up on the samples, and they have a lot of sample data here. So I can quickly change my chart types. I can create pie charts, bars, anything. And I can select the country and anything like that. So it's really like in seconds, you can quickly create any type of the chart, even though you don't have available them in your Excel file, chart types, and they represent the information which you are looking after. Very easy. And once you send this to your boss after creating the chart, since they are adding like a HTML page, if he opens on an iPad to see the information, he can see that straight away. And you have the native support for the Excel and PowerPoint and Word in the iPad now. Now I have done a lot of work on my office things, and I come back and say that, okay, this is good. I can do communication on the Yammer, and I can do communication, and I can save the files, and all that stuff is fine. Now I have to manage my employee leaves. What shall I do? And you go straight away, use an app as Time Off Manager. This is a free app in the store, and that gives you the capability to start straight away and manage your leave applications. Now, if I think about developing something like this, at least 3 to 4 weeks, at least 3 to 4 weeks time. And if my customer is on a mission critical systems, they would like to get it started. And if this app matches their requirements, why not they go and use this straight away? In seconds, I can start my employment system with a Time Off Manager. And they can go and create a new request. And if you see from the URL, it's using the SharePoint for storage purpose. So it's not going out of your SharePoint data system. So if you think about it's going and storing some data in USA or any other data systems, no, it's sharing in storing in your SharePoint system. So it's safe with you. And then when I got my customer file in my email, I moved them straight away in my sales and marketing. And this is the image which was there in the email. And I can straight away save those images in my SharePoint site. Now I have a geolocated information facility, and I would like to keep a track of assets. And since if I go and say that you manage a set for a location A and you manage location B, I don't have information when I have to see this. And I can use these add-ins capability to store the information in one place for all my geolocation offices. And this is one central place. So anybody who has access to my SharePoint can store the information and have the permissions to do that. Let me just come back to SharePoint side. Okay. Maybe a link problem. So these are the add-ins of the SharePoint. So if you see over here, network is slow. Let me open a different window and cancel this. And yeah, come back to this one here as an example in the meantime. A lot of time we have seen the lookup information in SharePoint list, and we create lookup columns and across the list. And a lot of time in previous days, we have info path capabilities to filter the lookup or do a cascading effect. But in SharePoint, out of box, it doesn't come up. Now, what I can do is I can use something called as KVisCom app. This is just for the demo. And there can be other apps, and do a cascading lookup. So if I have to define a population and say that when I select the state, my city has to be filtered. So if I go and give a title and then say for my state, like Victoria, I just like to see the Melbourne. But if I go and select my state as New South Wales, I should see Sydney. And when I come back to Queensland, I can see Brisbane, Gold Coast, every option. So this is automatically doing a filter while querying the data. I have not done any custom programming in this. It's just the app configuration which have been used here. Let's see, yeah. So my administration system is up. And I can define here, if you see, the hardware, software, objects, configuration, and every information in application is straight. And this is in my SharePoint, one place for every user. They can go and create the information. Now, if I have to define for hardwares, I have option to define by the type, by the department, and define the information for the inventory. I can go and add it, delete it, edit it, everything. So I have all the operations available for me. If I think about building this kind of a scaling app, which does a lot of work as hardware, inventory grouping, view as manager, view as user, again, like at least a 4-week time frame to build this kind of application. But if I have used it from the add-in store, it's just 5 minutes. I'm just reducing my customer requirement delivery time from months to weeks to minutes from the add-in store. And this is something which has been published, and we should be also doing this work, as when we come across a customer requirement and we find that this is a reusable scenario, we should build an add-in and publish it to the store. Now, a lot of time we see that we have consulting space, and we have to work with the clients and work with their projects, do a billing, manage their documents separately, and a lot of information. Now, this is huge. I can't imagine like building a billing system and a lot of management and things like that in one place in 1 month. But there is an app which can help you out with that. So if you have multiple clients, this is just for the demo purpose. You can build your apps if you would like to. And it gives you a tutorial as well. So what's the next? Do an add client, then use the list ribbon to add it. It's pretty self-explanatory. I don't have to really do a user training also for this. A lot of applications have those capabilities built in like this. And I can just go for that. And then I can go and look upon the projects for each client. Close this up, and then I can look upon the agenda and the timing, the documents, I can do the billing, and it's pretty much built in everything here. If I have to build something like this, it's really gonna be a month-long project for myself, and I will be handling a lot of custom requirements myself for the customer. Then we can use a lot of things like a staff directory and a lot of this stuff. Now, this is how we can quickly look at this add-in store here. And if I go and look upon the store, now they are getting more than thousands of the apps available in the store. So find out based on your requirement what suits you, and you can straight away start for your customer without giving the Visual Studio a start. It's delivering your requirement for a customer. And when you have one for your customer built and you see it's reusable, you can go and submit it back in the store. And you can define either it's a free or a paid, and you can define the pricing for that app. Now, after the work on the Office add-in and SharePoint add-ins, I have delivered a lot of applications. But sometime my customer has on-premises data. In the previous section, we saw here a point one-click migration, how they use it. And we have a lot of Office 365 import services and migration services Microsoft Help to allow us to do the migration data. If I look at migrating my local file share, and if I have some gigs of the data, I can do myself. I don't have to really depend on a tool from a partner and pay for it. As a developer, it's really a question whether we should be doing it or not, but I can do that easily. And it's just four commands which I'm going to run for the PowerShell. I have this file structure. Okay, let me get my system here. Yeah, I have this file structure over here which have the folders in nested hierarchy, and then there are dates which are like 6 months back. There is an author and things like that. And then what I have to do is I have to just run this PowerShell command. On the tools, which I'm going to be talking, but again, I can talk now also, I use something called this Power GUI editor, and it's something not looking up that. I can start this from here. I use Power GUI editor, and it's really handy for writing the PowerShell commands for me. You can use the PowerShell for Visual Studio tools as well. The PowerShell. Yeah. So there are a few settings you have to do. You have to know the username who has permission to go and create the files. Then you have to define the location from where you are looking to migrate. So I'm looking to migrate from my demo files drive. Then you define, there are two things here, as a temporary and then final. So what happens, first my command will go and read my file share or SharePoint on-premises. So in the first command when I will talk about, I can replace that command with a export SP web command, and it does the same thing. In the temporary, what it does is go and read your file share or SharePoint on-premises, get that structure like files, folders, lists, security, every information in a temporary folder, and then you run a command to make that temporary folder package to ready for your final migration. So what it does, it takes the destination SharePoint online URL, the library, and it matches the information from on-premises objects to online objects, like a user mapping or your file mapping or a folder objects mapping. And then it will use Azure Blob Storage to move the files. And then in the Azure Blob Storage, it will create a queue and the job. And SharePoint Online will automatically come and pick that job. Now, your SharePoint Online and Azure has to be in the same zone for a faster work. If not, still it will work, but it will take time for the queue to run. Here, it has to know your Azure storage. So you have to create a storage in the Azure, and you have to get the primary key for that. And then you have to just give a queue name over here as sample purpose. It can be any queue name. And once I run this, it's like an automatic job here. I shouldn't be getting errors. I have did a trial, all that, but you never know what happens. Yeah, so it's an online prompt. So I am not storing my credential here. Let me just give it again. So it's going and reading those files, creating the temporary packages, it's resolving. I will talk about this in parallel. So if you see over the line number 14, which talks about the no ADAL lookup, which is making sure that it's not looking the Azure AD from the on-premises system to do the user mapping, because I don't have a single sign-on setup for my that. But if I would like to do that user mapping, in the next command, I can give a XML, which says that this is my on-premises user and this is my online user. So if you have not done the AD setup sync, you can still use the user mapping. And now it has created the container, submitted the job. Now in the Azure, how shall I go and check this out? Let's look at one more tool, which I use, Azure Explorer. And I know what's my storage account there. And if you look at this, I have moved the data to local data. And there's a queue. Ignite demo queue here. And you will see that it will be updating this queue status very frequently. And it will be trying to read the files. And in the blob, let me see the number here. What was the blob number? Yeah, this is the one. So in this, you have two information. So one is a file and one is a package. So if you look at the after the grid here, this is a file, this is a package. So in the file, it has the file shared files, and in the package, it has those XMLs which are mapping your on-premises file share or SharePoint on-premises to SharePoint online objects. And if I go back to my system and look upon this as a final attempt, there's those XML files here. So if you would like to read the mapping, what has been happening, you can read that at a later point of time as well. And should be happening very quickly because in my last demo, it happened within 5 minutes. And it moves everything as a structure-wise. Yep, we got it. Great. So if you see the date, time, and everything, it comes the same way. And since I'm not doing a user mapping, so it's showing the user accounts as a system account. And if I go and drill down the hierarchy, it's holding the same structure. It's holding the same structure. So for a small and medium businesses, it's very easy to use this path and move their on-premises data to online. Otherwise, it's very complex scenario. You can go and use the partner tools for that. Okay, now I've been talking about a lot of add-ins, a lot of scripts which are automating a lot of jobs. But for us, when I build these add-ins, what tools do I have? What I shall be doing it? So for the developers, we have a lot of tools, and I really like a couple of the new tools which are published here. And these are the hyperlinks. So when you get the slide, you have links to these tools you can download and try. There is something very cool add-in here as UGenerator. And if you are working not on Windows systems, you are working on Mac machines, and you have access to VS Code, you can quickly run this UGenerator and create Office add-ins. And it gives you all the flexibilities like a Visual Studio give you. Then you have your Camel Designer and Color Code and SPKF, and Visual Studio is definitely one of the big tools. And I believe everybody must have seen these, but I would like to quickly show you a UGenerator generator here. Okay, now in the open source, UGenerator generator is an open source using the tools. So sometimes what happens, I have updated the system, but they may have released overnight. So when I'm generating the code, it may look upon the latest and may download the code. And I'm going to just do it as an administrator. And it's very easy. I will just increase the size here. That's the max. Should be OK. I don't know if it is visible, sorry. I'm just trying to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to just create a folder over here as your live demo. I will create this folder because it creates a lot of files when it runs. And I'm just going to navigate to that folder. Yep, I'm just inside that folder. And I will create this a bit bigger here. And I go here and say UOffice. And I have installed all the NPM, Boar, Gulp, TSD, and Node.js, which are required. And they are open source, and they can work well on a Mac machine. So you really don't need a Windows machine to do an Office add-in. And once you do a UOffice, if there is any update happened overnight, like if they have updated a UOffice generator or a Gulp or a Boar, it will go and download that before executing the related command. Let me just open this in the background and keep it this side. Yeah. So first, I have to give my project name. I can say Ignite demo live. And then it is asking me which is the directory. So I'm in the directory where I would like to create it. I can skip this path. And then it will ask you whether it's a mail or task pane or content. I'm going to do a mail. And then it is asking whether it's a HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, or a Angular, or a Angular ADAL. Angular ADAL is something which you can use when you would like to build an add-in which talks to Office 365 for any services. And ADAL is your Active Directory Authentication Library, which will help you for your Azure AD authentication. And then you have a manifest XML. In the add-in, there is just one file which is required, is a manifest XML, which tells you what it does, what permission it has, and what is the destination for the web pages. And if you're just building that, you can just build that. I'm just going to take a HTML JavaScript, and it's going to ask me what sort of actions you're going to do. And then I'm just going to do a mail read. And then it goes and creates those files in the system parallelly. And it will throwing up the warning because I'm not giving a description and others, not mandatory settings. So it will just throw a warning that you need those things. And sometimes it does install directly when there is any update. You don't have to worry because it's not going to fail over here because it's just making sure that it has a latest system downloaded and installed in the files. And this is, I'm not going to open a Visual Studio for this. I'm going to open a Visual Studio Code, which is your Mac system. I'm running on a LAN, so it should be faster here. They have released in the last 1 week two versions for this updated. So when I installed, it was 0.5.0, and recently the Yo is 0.5.2. I'm just waiting to complete this. And since I'm talking about the open source, so I'm not going to run an IIS here. I can run still a website. So your web add-in can be on your Apache server or any web server and having those HTML pages. And your add-in will reference those HTML pages in your Outlook or Word or PowerPoint files. And I'm going to run a Gulp server here, which is like a web server for this. Yep, it does the board install here. And then it just goes and set it up and make sure that it has all the files created. So it's going to give me a long list of the file name when it doesn't happen. So when I do the system check, I generally just run the install command for everything. And then it installs the latest. And then you run it, you won't see these happening. It takes a bit of time to connect back to the internet and do that work. Should be quicker now. Yep. So it's downloading those files. So if you see here, it's going to the GitHub and downloading those files from Andrew Cornell, who is building this UOffice add-in. And then it downloads those files locally and make sure that they are downloaded. And these are the files which you can ignore. They are the board files. And it's all done here. Now if I go and say, code, which is a Visual Studio Code command to run a Visual Studio Code from this location. It's going to open my project now. And if you see this manifest XML, this is the crux of the add-in. And you will see there is a URL here, which is the add-in page URL. And if I go back to the command prompt and do a so this is starting my web server, and it is started, and this is a default URL. So if you have your add-in hosting on the Azure or anything, you can just change this URL to your Azure website or whatever. And if I go back and there's a certificate, but I can go because it's creating a certificate locally in the system, and I can see my add-in because it's a blank. It is not doing anything because it runs from a context of an Outlook. So, but it's doing a read from a subject and from, And if I have to use this again in my Outlook, what I have to do is I have to go to, sorry, in the Outlook here, and go to the Manage Add-ins. And I can just point to this file and say from a file. So you can test your add-in before publishing to the store. And they are running localhost, so you don't need anything here. And you have those, just need a manifest XML here. Okay, so it is asking for a URL, and we can give those information, and you can just straight away test it up in the system. And they run it from a context, so when you install this in your Outlook, it's gonna read your subject and from line from the system. And this is Visual Studio Code, so I don't need Visual Studio on Mac machine for running this or building this application. Now, coming back quickly on the presentation, running out of time. So now we saw the tools, how we can use them. And now, when I get stuck generally, what shall I do is I go and ask for help on different channels. Like for this Visual Studio Code tool, when I was having a problem, I went to GitHub and asked for the help, and they told me you have to do these setups. When I generally have issues or I look upon the Yammer, I post them or help the community, use the Twitter. When you see there is something missing, use user voice and raise that this functionality is missing, and Microsoft team really look upon those issues and respond back to us and say that they are investigating or they are analyzing this information. So we saw all that information as developer, what we generally do, but how we can approach a solution and how we can use those new add-in model and quickly solve the problem. This is my Twitter handle, and I work on the Office 365 in SharePoint, so if you have questions, we can discuss now or in the launch in the community. Connect to the Office 365 network on Yammer and have questions or communication keep going. And you can join us today evening in the launch, community launch, and we will be having a Connect services. So you are happy to come and join us for the information and the discussion. Complete my eval if I have been good here and tell me what I have to improve on. And if you would like to learn more, so we got a session today at 5 and 6:30, which are going to take a deep dive, Visual Studio programming only. There will be not much presentation and talk. Andrew, who gave us the hoodies here and the, sorry, what happened? Okay, yeah. So you guys can join these sessions. They will give you the next learning path. Any question, guys, before we head out? And we have some goodies, so if you have questions, you're gonna get something. Yeah.
With the SharePoint apps from the store, how can you tell where that data is persisted?
So when you look at the SharePoint app or add-in now, you see them, either they are SharePoint hosted or a provider hosted. So when they are SharePoint hosted, either they are storing in the your app web or in the host web. So your data is within you or with you in the same data center. But when it is a provider hosted, you have to really see whether they are doing a local data store in their data systems and doing analysis or anything, because their data centers can be different, but you are just connecting them over a service, or they are writing back to your SharePoint system. So it's a particular app which does the work. So we have to really see what the application does or app does, and then we can say that this is stores data within your SharePoint site or outside the SharePoint. So I can give you a shirt for the first question. I'm not sure on the size though. Thank you. So when you go to the App Store and before you go and say add it to my SharePoint site, you see them, they have a publisher website and support information, and you can see other users' feedback. Like if I buy an app, I have a capability to go and give a feedback over there and see what sort of feedbacks are available and what's the publisher site. And you can go on the publisher site and see how many apps they have been publishing in the store, what's their customer base and things like that. And you can contact them before buying it. If it is a free, then you can just go and evaluate it. But if it is a paid one, you can go and connect with them and understand, maybe request a demo, and then you can get a feel of what support they can give you when you buy an app from them. I can give you the second one. Thank you. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Can you customize the CSS once you buy the app from them? Make it look and feel to your company?
Okay, so in app, when you build the SharePoint add-ins or the Office add-ins, now there is something called as Office UI Fabric available, which is making sure the app, when you change the themes or anything like that, which is an Office or a SharePoint thing, it adapts to that change. So when you would like to do a customization fully to your organization, you can still go and apply the CSS from your SharePoint site to your application. But it's really a question, how many customizations you are pushing? Are there just the theming or the image and branding, everything like that? So it's up to you to check whether the application is really worth doing that much customization or just you would like to use the theme engine for the color code. Is that?
Yeah, how can we make sure that the app doesn't crash at SharePoint site, or it doesn't affect, if there is a problem in the SharePoint, in the app site, so how do we, is there any steps we can take to minimize the risk of crashing the whole SharePoint site or problem?
So app is not running in SharePoint site. That's the beauty of the apps or add-ins. So it runs outside of the SharePoint context. You see the URL when you go to the app, it's different than your SharePoint URLs. So if you look at the on-premises setup, that's where you can find out how the apps runs or add-in runs. You will see something, a new ASP.NET, sorry, IIS website turning up in the IIS. So when you have SharePoint websites in the IIS, you will see one more coming up, which is holding your apps. So when you click on the share app or add-in in the SharePoint, it goes to that URL. It doesn't run anything in the SharePoint. And that's where your client object model and communication between those two websites work using that. So if your app is failing up, it doesn't break anything on your SharePoint. Or if your SharePoint is down, your app may be working up properly. There's a question back. Question? Yeah. So from a business perspective, so when customer raise a requirement that they would like to do it, you have to look upon the add-in capability. Where there are certain points which can be done in the add-in, not everything. And there is a, like the new PNP pattern practices guidance is more about how is your on-premises solution can be tweaked for your cloud system. Like your timer jobs are not there in your on online system. So how you use your Azure web job to help that system mitigate as a solution. So it's really a question, what is a case we have and how we can build a system in the online or on-premises. App is restricted to few features only. I have not tried that, but I can check and tell you. If you can catch me up in the launch, I can. By the time I will check and help you out with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.